Welcome to the Buddha's Wisdom Podcast, Season 3, Episode 6. The topic of this episode is the Buddha's quest for enlightenment. One, the Noble Quest. Mendicants, there are these two quests, the Noble Quest and the Ignoble Quest. And what is the ignoble quest? It's when someone who is themselves liable to be reborn seeks what is also liable to be reborn. Themselves liable to grow old, fall sick, die, sorrow and become corrupted, they seek what is also liable to these things. And what should be described as liable to be reborn? Partners and children, male and female bondservants, goats and sheep, chickens and pigs, elephants and cattle, and gold and currency are liable to be reborn. These attachments are liable to be reborn. Someone who is tied, infatuated, and attached to such things, themselves liable to be reborn, seeks what is also liable to be reborn. And what should be described as liable to grow old? Partners and children, male and female bondservants, goats and sheep, chickens and pigs, elephants and cattle, and gold and currency are liable to grow old. These attachments are liable to grow old. Someone who is tied, infatuated, and attached to such things, themselves liable to grow old, seeks what is also liable to grow old. And what should be described as liable to fall sick? Partners and children, male and female bondservants, goats and sheep, chickens and pigs, and elephants and cattle are liable to fall sick. These attachments are liable to fall sick. Someone who is tied, infatuated, and attached to such things, themselves liable to falling sick, seeks what is also liable to fall sick. And what should be described as liable to die? Partners and children, male and female bondservants, goats and sheep, chickens and pigs, elephants and cattle are liable to die. These attachments are liable to die. Someone who is tied, infatuated, and attached to such things, themselves liable to die, seeks what is also liable to die. And what should be described as liable to sorrow? Partners and children, male and female bondservants, goats and sheep, chickens and pigs, and elephants and cattle are liable to sorrow. These attachments are liable to sorrow. Someone who is tied, infatuated, and attached to such things, themselves liable to sorrow, seeks what is also liable to sorrow. And what should be described as liable to corruption? Partners and children, male and female bondservants, goats and sheep, chickens and pigs, elephants and cattle, and gold and currency are liable to corruption. These attachments are liable to corruption. Someone who is tied, infatuated, and attached to such things, themselves liable to corruption, seeks what is also liable to corruption. This is the ignoble quest. And what is the noble quest? It's when someone who is themselves liable to be reborn, understanding the drawbacks in being liable to be reborn, seeks that which is free of rebirth, the supreme sanctuary from the yoke, extinguishment. Themselves liable to grow old, fall sick, die, sorrow, and become corrupted, understanding the drawbacks in these things, they seek that which is free of old age, sickness, death, sorrow, and corruption, the supreme sanctuary from the yoke, extinguishment. This is the noble quest. Mendicants, before my awakening, when I was still unawakened but intent on awakening, I too, being liable to be reborn, sought what is also liable to be reborn. Myself liable to grow old, fall sick, die, sorrow, and become corrupted, I sought what is also liable to these things. Then it occurred to me, why do I, being liable to be reborn, grow old, fall sick, sorrow, die, and become corrupted, seek things that have the same nature? Why don't I seek that which is free of rebirth, old age, sickness, death, sorrow, and corruption, the supreme sanctuary from the yoke, extinguishment. Sometime later, while still with pristine black hair, blessed with youth, in the prime of life, though my mother and father wished otherwise, weeping with tearful faces, I shaved off my hair and beard, dressed in ochre robes, and went forth from the lay life into homelessness. Once I had gone forth, I set out to discover what is skillful, seeking the supreme state of sublime peace. I approached Alara Kalama and said to him, "Reverend Kalama, I wish to lead the spiritual life in this teaching and training." Alara Kalama replied, "Stay, Venerable. This teaching is such that a sensible person can soon realize their own tradition with their own insight and live having achieved it." I quickly memorized that teaching. As far as lip recital and verbal repetition went, I spoke the doctrine of knowledge, the elder doctrine. I claimed to know and see, and so did the others. Then it occurred to me, it is not solely by mere faith that Alara Kalama declares, "I realize this teaching with my own insight and live having achieved it." Surely he meditates knowing and seeing this teaching. So I approached Alara Kalama and said to him, "Reverend Kalama, to what extent do you say you've realized this teaching with your own insight?" When I said this, he declared the dimension of nothingness. Then it occurred to me, it is not just Alara Kalama who has faith, energy, mindfulness, immersion, and wisdom. I too have these things. Why don't I make an effort to realize the same teaching that Alara Kalama says he has realized with his own insight? I quickly realized that teaching with my own insight and lived having achieved it. So I approached Alara Kalama and said to him, "Reverend Kalama, is it up to this point that you have realized this teaching with your own insight and declare having achieved it?" "I have, Reverend." "I too, Reverend, have realized this teaching with my own insight up to this point and live having achieved it." "We are fortunate, Reverend, so very fortunate to see a venerable such as yourself as one of our spiritual companions. So the teaching that I've realized with my own insight and declare having achieved it, you've realized with your own insight and dwell having achieved it. The teaching that you've realized with your own insight and dwell having achieved it, I've realized with my own insight and declare having achieved it. So the teaching that I know, you know, and the teaching that you know, I know. I am like you and you are like me. Come now, Reverend, we should both lead this community together." And that is how my tutor, Alara Kalama, placed me, his pupil, on the same position as him, and honored me with lofty praise. Then it occurred to me, this teaching doesn't lead to disillusionment, dispassion, cessation, peace, insight, awakening, and extinguishment. It only leads as far as rebirth in the dimension of nothingness. Realizing that this teaching was inadequate, I left disappointed. I set out to discover what is skillful, seeking the supreme state of sublime peace. I approached Uddaka, son of Rama, and said to him, "Reverend, I wish to lead the spiritual life in this teaching and training." Uddaka replied, "Stay, Venerable. This teaching is such that a sensible person can soon realize their own tradition with their own insight and live having achieved it." I quickly memorized that teaching. As far as lip recital and verbal repetition went, I spoke the doctrine of knowledge, the elder doctrine. I claimed to know and see, and so did others. Then it occurred to me, it is not solely by mere faith that Rama declares, "I realize this teaching with my own insight and live having achieved it." Surely he meditated knowing and seeing this teaching. So I approached Uddaka, son of Rama, and said to him, "Reverend, to what extent did Rama say he had realized this teaching with his own insight?" When I said this, Uddaka, son of Rama, declared the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. Then it occurred to me, it is not just Rama who had faith, energy, mindfulness, immersion, and wisdom. I too have these things. Why don't I make an effort to realize the same teaching that Rama said he had realized with his own insight? I quickly realized that teaching with my own insight and lived having achieved it. So I approached Uddaka, son of Rama, and said to him, Reverend, had Rama realized this teaching with his own insight up to this point and declared having achieved it? He had, Reverend. I too have realized this teaching with my own insight up to this point and live having achieved it. We are fortunate, Reverend, so very fortunate to see a venerable such as yourself as one of our spiritual companions. So the teaching that Rama had realized with his own insight and declared having achieved it, you've realized with your own insight and dwell having achieved it. The teaching that you've realized with your own insight and dwell having achieved it, Rama had realized with his own insight and declared having achieved it. So the teaching that Rama directly knew, you know, and the teaching that you know, Rama directly knew. Rama was like you, and you are like Rama. Come now, Reverend, you should lead this community. And that is how my spiritual companion, Uddaka, son of Rama, placed me in the position of tutor and honored me with lofty praise. Then it occurred to me, this teaching doesn't lead to disillusionment, dispassion, cessation, peace, insight, awakening, and extinguishment. It only leads as far as rebirth in the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. Realizing that this teaching was inadequate, I left disappointed. I set out to discover what is skillful, seeking the supreme state of sublime peace, traveling stage by stage in the Magadhan lands. I arrived at the town of Senar in Uruvela. There I saw a delightful park, a lovely grove with a flowing river that was clean and charming, with smooth banks. And nearby was a village to resort to for alms. Then it occurred to me, this park is truly delightful, a lovely grove with a flowing river that's clean and charming, with smooth banks. And nearby there's a village to resort to for alms. This is good enough for striving for a gentleman wanting to strive. So I sat down right there thinking, this is good enough for striving. And so, being myself liable to be reborn, understanding the drawbacks in being liable to be reborn, I sought that which is free of rebirth, the supreme sanctuary from the yoke, extinguishment. And I found it. Being myself liable to grow old, fall sick, die, sorrow, and become corrupted, understanding the drawbacks in these things, I sought that which is free of old age, sickness, death, sorrow, and corruption, the supreme sanctuary from the yoke, extinguishment, and I found it. Knowledge and vision arose in me. My freedom is unshakable. This is my last rebirth. Now there'll be no more future lives. Two, the longer discourse with Satchika. Worthy Gotama mustn't have experienced the kind of pleasant or painful feelings that would occupy the mind. How could I not, Agivasena? Before my awakening, when I was still unawakened but intent on awakening, I thought, life at home is cramped and dirty. Life gone forth is wide open. It's not easy for someone living at home to lead the spiritual life utterly full and pure like a polished shell. Why don't I shave off my hair and beard, dress in ochre robes, and go forth from the lay life to homelessness? Sometime later, while still with pristine black hair, blessed with youth, in the prime of life, though my mother and father wished otherwise, weeping with tearful faces, I shaved off my hair and beard, dressed in ochre robes, and went forth from the lay life into homelessness. Once I had gone forth, I set out to discover what is skillful, seeking the supreme state of sublime peace. I approached Alara Kalama and said to him, Reverend Kalama, I wish to lead the spiritual life in this teaching and training. Alara Kalama replied, Stay, Venerable. This teaching is such that a sensible person can soon realize their own tradition with their own insight and live having achieved it. I quickly memorized that teaching. As far as lip recital and verbal repetition went, I spoke the doctrine of knowledge, the elder doctrine. I claimed to know and see, and so did the others. Then it occurred to me, it is not solely by mere faith that Alara de Kalama declares, I realize this teaching with my own insight and live having achieved it. Surely he meditates knowing and seeing this teaching. So I approached Alara Kalama and said to him, Reverend Kalama, to what extent do you say you've realized this teaching with your own insight? When I said this, he declared the dimension of nothingness. And then it occurred to me, it is not just Alara Kalama who has faith, energy, mindfulness, immersion, and wisdom. I too have these things. Why don't I make an effort to realize the same teaching that Alara Kalama says he has realized with his own insight? I quickly realized that teaching with my own insight and lived having achieved it. So I approached Alara Kalama and said to him, Reverend Kalama, is it up to this point that you realize this teaching with your own insight and declare having achieved it? I have, Reverend. I too have realized this teaching with my own insight up to this point and live having achieved it. We are fortunate, Reverend, so very fortunate to see a venerable such as yourself as one of our spiritual companions. So the teaching that I've realized with my own insight and declare having achieved it, you've realized with your own insight and dwell having achieved it. The teaching that you've realized with your own insight and dwell having achieved it, I've realized with my own insight and declare having achieved it. So the teaching that I know, you know, and the teaching that you know, I know. I am like you and you are like me. Come now, Reverend, we should both lead this community together. And that is how my tutor, Alara Kalama, placed me, his pupil, on the same position as him, and honored me with lofty praise. Then it occurred to me, this teaching doesn't lead to disillusionment, dispassion, cessation, peace, insight, awakening, and extinguishment. It only leads as far as rebirth in the dimension of nothingness. Realizing that this teaching was inadequate, I left disappointed. I set out to discover what is skillful, seeking the supreme state of sublime peace. I approached Uddaka, son of Rama, and said to him, Reverend, I wish to lead this spiritual life and this teaching and this training. Uddaka replied, Stay, Venerable, this teaching is such that a sensible person can soon realize their own tradition with their own insight and live having achieved it. I quickly memorized that teaching as far as lip recital and verbal repetition went. I spoke the doctrine of knowledge, the elder doctrine. I claimed to know and see, and so did others. Then it occurred to me, it is not solely by mere faith that Rama declares, I realize this teaching with my own insight and live having achieved it. Surely he meditated knowing and seeing this teaching. So I approached Uddaka, son of Rama, and said to him, Reverend, to what extent did Rama say he had realized this teaching with his own insight? When I said this, Uddaka, son of Rama, declared the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. Then it occurred to me, it's not just Rama who had faith, energy, mindfulness, immersion, and wisdom. I too have these things. Why don't I make an effort to realize the same teaching that Rama said he had realized with his own insight? I quickly realized that teaching with my own insight and lived having achieved it. So I approached Uddaka, son of Rama, and said to him, Reverend, had Rama realized this teaching with his own insight up to this point and declared having achieved it? He had, Reverend. I too have realized this teaching with mine own insight up to this point and live having achieved it. We are fortunate, Reverend, so very fortunate to see venerable such as yourself as one of our spiritual companions. The teaching that Rama had realized with his own insight and declared having achieved it, you have realized with your own insight and dwell having achieved it. The teaching that you've realized with your own insight and dwell having achieved it, Rama had realized with his own insight and declared having achieved it. So the teaching that Rama directly knew, you know, and the teaching that you know, Rama directly knew. Rama was like you, and you are like Rama. Come now, Reverend, you should lead this community. And that is how my spiritual companion, Uttaka, son of Rama, placed me in the position of a tutor and honored me with lofty praise. Then it occurred to me, this teaching doesn't lead to disillusionment, dispassion, cessation, peace, insight, awakening, and extinguishment. It only leads as far as rebirth in the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. Realizing that this teaching was inadequate, I left disappointed. I set out to discover what is skillful, seeking the supreme state of sublime peace. Traveling stage by stage in the Magadhan lands, I arrived at the town of Senar in Uruvilar. There I saw a delightful park, a lovely grove with a flowing river that was clean and charming, with smooth banks, and nearby was a village to resort to for alms. Then it occurred to me, this park is truly delightful, a lovely grove with a flowing river that's clean and charming, with smooth banks, and nearby there's a village to resort to for alms. This is good enough for striving, for a gentleman wanting to strive. So I sat down right there thinking, this is good enough for striving. And then these three similes, which were neither supernaturally inspired nor learned before in the past, occurred to me. Suppose there was a green sappy log and it was lying in water. Then a person comes along with a drill stick, thinking to light a fire and produce heat. What do you think, Agivasena? By drilling the stick against the green sappy log lying in the water, could they light a fire and produce heat? No, worthy Gotama. Why not? Because it's a green sappy log, and it's lying in the water. That person will eventually get weary and frustrated. In the same way, there are ascetics and Brahmins who don't live withdrawn in body and mind from the sensual pleasures. They haven't internally given up or stilled desire, affection, infatuation, thirst, and passion for sensual pleasures. Regardless of whether or not they feel painful, sharp, severe, acute feelings due to overexertion, they are incapable of knowledge and vision of supreme awakening. This was the first example that occurred to me. Then a second example occurred to me. Suppose there was a green sappy log, and it was lying on dry land, far from the water. Then a person coming along with a drill stick, thinking to light a fire and produce heat. What do you think, Agivasena? By drilling the stick against that green sappy log on dry land, far from water, could they light a fire and produce heat? No, worthy Gotama. Why not? Because it's still green, a sappy log, despite the fact that it's lying on dry land, far from water. That person will eventually get weary and frustrated. In the same way, there are ascetics and Brahmins who live withdrawn in body and mind from sensual pleasures, but they haven't internally given up or stilled desire, affection, infatuation, thirst, and passion for sensual pleasures. Regardless of whether or not they suffer painful, sharp, severe, acute feelings due to overexertion, they are incapable of knowledge and vision of supreme awakening. This was the second example that occurred to me. Then a third example occurred to me. Suppose there was a dried up, withered log, and it was lying on dry land far from water. Then a person coming along with a drill stick, thinking to light a fire and produce heat, what do you think, Agivasena? By drilling the stick against that dried up, withered log on dry land far from water, could they light a fire and produce heat? Yes, worthy Gotama. Why is that? Because it is dried up, withered log, and is lying on dry land far from water. In the same way, there are ascetics and Brahmins who live withdrawn in body and mind from sensual pleasures, and they have internally given up and stilled desire, affection, infatuation, thirst, and passion for sensual pleasures. Regardless of whether or not they suffer painful, sharp, severe, acute feelings due to overexertion, they are capable of knowledge and vision, of supreme awakening. This was the third example that occurred to me. These are the three similes which were neither supernaturally inspired nor learned before in the past that occurred to me. And then it occurred to me, why don't I, with teeth clenched and tongue pressed against the roof of my mouth, squeeze, squash, and scorch the mind with mind? So that's what I did, until sweat ran from my armpits. It was like when a strong man grabs a weaker man by the head or throat or shoulder and squeezes, squashes, and crushes them. In the same way, with teeth clenched and tongue pressed against the roof of my mouth, I squeezed, squashed, and crushed the mind with mind until sweat ran from my armpits. My energy was roused up and unflagging, and my mindfulness was established and lucid. But my body was disturbed, not tranquil, because I'd pushed too hard with that painful striving. But even such painful feeling did not occupy my mind. Then it occurred to me, why don't I practice the breathless absorption? So I cut off my breathing through my mouth and nose. When the winds came out my ears making a loud noise, like the puffing of a blacksmith's bellows. My energy was roused up and unflagging, and my mindfulness was established and lucid, but my body was disturbed, not tranquil, because I'd pushed too hard with that painful striving. But even such painful feeling did not occupy my mind. Then it occurred to me, why don't I keep practicing the breathless absorption? So I cut off my breathing through my mouth and nose and ears. But then strong winds ground my head, like a strong man was drilling into my head with a sharp point. My energy was roused up and unflagging, and my mindfulness was established and lucid, but my body was disturbed, not tranquil, because I'd pushed too hard with that painful striving. But even such painful feeling did not occupy my mind. Then it occurred to me, why don't I keep practicing the breathless absorption? So I cut off my breathing through my mouth and nose and ears. But then I got a severe headache, like a strong man was tightening a tough leather strap around my head. My energy was roused up and unflagging, and my mindfulness was established and lucid, but my body was disturbed, not tranquil, because I'd pushed too hard with that painful feeling. But even such painful feeling did not occupy my mind. Then it occurred to me, why don't I keep practicing the breathless absorption? So I cut off my breathing through my mouth and nose and ears. But then strong winds carved up my belly, like a deft butcher or their apprentice was slicing my belly open with a sharp meat cleaver. My energy was roused up and unflagging, and my mindfulness was established and lucid, but my body was disturbed, not tranquil, because I had pushed too hard with that painful feeling. But even such painful feeling did not occupy my mind. Then it occurred to me, why don't I keep practicing the breathless absorption? So I cut off my breathing through my mouth and nose and ears. But then there was an intense burning in my body, like two strong men grabbing a weaker man by the arms to burn and scorch him on a pit of glowing coals. My energy was roused up and unflagging, and my mindfulness was established and lucid, but my body was disturbed, not tranquil, because I'd pushed too hard with that painful striving. But even such painful feeling did not occupy my mind. Then some deity saw me and said, "The ascetic Gotama is dead." Others said, "He's not dead, but he's dying." Others said, "He's not dead or dying. The ascetic Gotama is a perfected one, for that is how the perfected ones live." Then it occurred to me, why don't I practice completely cutting off food? But deities came to me and said, good fellow, don't practice totally cutting off food. If you do, we'll infuse heavenly nectar into the pores and you will live on that. Then I thought, if I claim to be completely fasting while these deities are infusing heavenly nectar into my pores, that would be a lie on my part. So I dismissed those deities, saying, there's no need. Then it occurred to me, why don't I just take a little bit of food each time? A handful of broth made from mung beans, horse gram, chickpeas, or green gram. So that's what I did, until my body became extremely emaciated. Due to eating so little, my major and minor limbs became like the joints of an 80-year-old man or a dying man. My bottom became like a camel's hoof. My vertebrae stuck out like beads on a string, and my ribs were as gaunt as the broken-down rafters of an old barn. Due to eating so little, the gleam of my eyes sank deep in their sockets, like the gleam of water sunk deep down a well. Due to eating so little, my scalp shriveled and withered like a green bitter gourd in the wind and sun. Due to eating so little, the skin of my belly stuck to my backbone, so that when I tried to rub the skin of my belly, I grabbed my backbone. And when I tried to rub my backbone, I rubbed the skin of my belly. Due to eating so little, when I tried to urinate or defecate, I fell face down right there. Due to eating so little, when I tried to relieve my body by rubbing my limbs with my hands, the hair rotted at its roots and fell out. Then some people saw me and said, the ascetic Gotama is black. Some said, he's not black, he's brown. Some said, he's neither black nor brown. The ascetic Gotama has tawny skin. That's how far the pure, bright complexion of my skin had been ruined by taking so little food. Then I thought, whatever ascetics and Brahmins have experienced painful, sharp, severe, acute feelings due to overexertion, whether in the past, future, or present, this is as far as it goes. No one has done more than this. But I have not achieved any superhuman distinction in knowledge and vision worthy of the noble ones by this severe, grueling work. Could there be another path to awakening? Then it occurred to me, I recall sitting in the cool shade of a black plum tree while my father, the Sakyan, was off working. Quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unskillful qualities, I entered and remained in the first absorption, which has the rapture and bliss born of seclusion, while placing the mind and keeping it connected. Could that be the path to awakening? Stemming from that memory came the understanding, that is the path to awakening. Then it occurred to me, why am I afraid of that pleasure? For it has nothing to do with sensual pleasures or unskillful qualities. Then I thought, I'm not afraid of that pleasure, for it has nothing to do with sensual pleasures or unskillful qualities. Then I thought, I can't achieve that pleasure with a body so excessively emaciated. Why don't I eat some solid food, some rice and porridge? So I ate some solid food. Now at that time the five mendicants were attending on me, thinking, the ascetic Gotama will tell us of any truth that he realizes. But when I ate some solid food, they left disappointed in me, saying, the ascetic Gotama has become indulgent. He strayed from the struggle and returned to indulgence. After eating solid food and gathering my strength, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unskillful qualities, I entered and remained in the first absorption, which has the rapture and bliss born of seclusion, while placing the mind and keeping it connected. But even such pleasant feelings did not occupy my mind. As the placing of the mind and keeping it connected were stilled, I entered and remained in the second absorption, which has the rapture and bliss born of immersion, with internal clarity and mind at one, without placing the mind and keeping it connected. But even such pleasant feeling did not occupy my mind. And with the fading away of rapture, I entered and remained in the third absorption, where I meditated with equanimity, mindful and aware, personally experiencing the bliss of which the noble ones declare, equanimous and mindful, one meditates in bliss. But even such pleasant feeling did not occupy my mind. With the giving up of pleasure and pain, and the ending of former happiness and sadness, I entered and remained in the fourth absorption, without pleasure or pain, with pure equanimity and mindfulness. But even such pleasant feeling did not occupy my mind. When my mind had immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady, and imperturbable, I extended it towards recollection of past lives. I recollected my many kinds of past lives with features and details. This was the first knowledge which I achieved in the first watch of the night. Ignorance was destroyed and knowledge arose. Darkness was destroyed and light arose, as happens for a meditator who is diligent, keen, and resolute. But even such pleasant feeling did not occupy my mind. When my mind had immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady, and imperturbable, I extended it towards knowledge of the death and rebirth of sentient beings. With clairvoyance that is purified and superhuman, I saw sentient beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, in a good place or a bad place. I understood how sentient beings are reborn according to their deeds. This was the second knowledge which I achieved in the middle watch of the night. Ignorance was destroyed and knowledge arose. Darkness was destroyed and light arose, as happens for a meditator who is diligent, keen, and resolute. But even such pleasant feeling did not occupy my mind. When my mind had immersed in samadhi like this, purified, bright, flawless, rid of corruptions, pliable, workable, steady, and imperturbable, I extended it towards knowledge of the ending of defilements. I truly understood, this is suffering. This is the origin of suffering. This is the cessation of suffering. This is the practice that leads to the cessation of suffering. I truly understood, these are defilements. This is the origin of defilements. This is the cessation of defilements. This is the practice that leads to the cessation of defilements. Knowing and seeing like this, my mind was freed from the defilements of sensuality, desire to be reborn, and ignorance. When it was freed, I knew it was freed. I understood, rebirth is ended. The spiritual journey has been completed. What had to be done has been done. There is nothing further for this place. This was the third knowledge which I achieved in the last watch of the night. Ignorance was destroyed and knowledge arose. Darkness was destroyed and light arose, as happens for a meditator who is diligent, keen, and resolute. But even such pleasant feeling did not occupy my mind. Three, the ancient city. Mendicants, before my awakening, when I was still unawakened but intent on awakening, I thought, alas, this world has fallen into trouble. It's born, grows old, dies, passes away, and is reborn, yet it doesn't understand how to escape from this suffering, from old age and death. Oh, when will an escape be found from this suffering, from old age and death? Then it occurred to me, when what exists is there old age and death? What is the condition for old age and death? Then, through rational application of mind, I comprehended with wisdom, when rebirth exists, there's old age and death. Rebirth is a condition for old age and death. Then it occurred to me, when what exists is their rebirth, continued existence, grasping, craving, feeling, contact, the six sense fields, name and form. What is a condition for name and form? Then, through rational application of mind, I comprehended with wisdom, when consciousness exists, there are name and form. Consciousness is a condition for name and form. Then it occurred to me, when what exists is there consciousness? What is a condition for consciousness? Then, through rational application of mind, I comprehended with wisdom, when name and form exist, there's consciousness. Name and form are a condition for consciousness. Then it occurred to me, this consciousness turns back from name and form and doesn't go beyond that. This is the extent to which one may be reborn, grow old, die, pass away, or reappear. That is, name and form are conditions for consciousness. Consciousness is a condition for name and form. Name and form are conditions for the six sense fields. The six sense fields are conditions for contact. This is how the entire mass of suffering originates. Origination, origination. Such was the vision, knowledge, wisdom, realization, and light that arose in me regarding teachings not learned before from another. Then it occurred to me, when what doesn't exist, is there no old age and death? When what ceases, do old age and death cease? Then, through rational application of mind, I comprehended with wisdom, when rebirth doesn't exist, there is no old age and death. When rebirth ceases, old age and death cease. Then it occurred to me, when what doesn't exist, is there no rebirth? Continued existence, grasping, craving, feeling, contact, six sense fields, name and form. When what ceases, do name and form cease? Then, through rational application of mind, I comprehended with wisdom, when consciousness doesn't exist, there is no name and form. When consciousness ceases, name and form cease. Then it occurred to me, when what doesn't exist, is there no consciousness? When what ceases, does consciousness cease? Then, through rational application of mind, I comprehended with wisdom, when name and form don't exist, there is no consciousness. When name and form cease, consciousness ceases. Then it occurred to me, I have discovered the path to awakening. That is, when name and form cease, consciousness ceases. When consciousness ceases, name and form cease. When name and form cease, the six sense fields cease. When the six sense fields cease, contact ceases. This is how this entire mass of suffering ceases. Cessation, cessation. Such was the vision, knowledge, wisdom, realization, and light that arose in me regarding teachings not learned before from another. Suppose a person was walking through a forest, they'd see an ancient path, an ancient route travelled by humans in the past. Following it along, they'd see an ancient city, an ancient capital, inhabited by humans in the past. It was lovely, complete with parks, groves, lotus ponds, and embankments. Then that person would inform a king of, or their chief minister, "Please, sir, you should know this. While walking through a forest, I saw an ancient path, an ancient route travelled by humans in the past. Following it along, I saw an ancient city, an ancient capital, inhabited by humans in the past. It was lovely, complete with parks, groves, lotus ponds, and embankments. Sir, you should rebuild that city." Then that king or their chief minister would have that city rebuilt. And after some time, that city was successful and prosperous, populous, full of people, attained to growth and expansion. In the same way, I saw an ancient path, an ancient route, travelled by fully awakened Buddhas in the past. And what is that ancient path, the ancient route travelled by fully awakened Buddhas in the past. It is simply this noble eightfold path, that is, right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right immersion. This is that ancient path, the ancient route travelled by fully awakened Buddhas in the past. Following it along, I directly knew old age and death, their origin, their cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation. Following it along, I directly knew rebirth, continued existence, grasping, craving, feeling, contact, the six sense fields, name and form, consciousness. Following it along, I directly knew choices, their origin, their cessation, and the practice that leads to their cessation. Having directly known this, I told the monks, nuns, laymen, and laywomen, and that's how this spiritual life has become successful and prosperous, extensive, popular, widespread, and well proclaimed wherever there are gods and humans. Here ends this episode of the Buddha's Wisdom Podcast. Season 3 of the Buddha's Wisdom Podcast is based on the anthology structure provided by Bhikkhu Bodhi's In the Buddha's Word, an anthology of discourses from the Pali Canon. The translations from the original Pali are by Bhikkhu Sujato and can be sourced from Sutta Central, which uses a Creative Commons license for translations. For information about this podcast, go to everydaydharma.net and then click on the Buddha's Wisdom Podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast with a donation, click on the Ko-fi link in the description or on the Everyday Dharma Network website. Thank you for listening. May you all find happiness and peace.